You may or may not recognize State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy now because he's got a brand new look. Hey, Tacky.
Hey, Joe. Glad to be here and sharing my summer cut at the beginning of fall.
Amazingly, you look even younger after your haircut. I don't know how that's possible, but you do.
Well, I think I'm one of the few electeds that doesn't seem to age quickly in elected life. I remember a few years into elected office, I got people asking how my hair wasn't turning white so quickly. So a combination of very good genetics and being single, I think, may help too.
I think a lot of people might agree with that, yeah. But, you know, we should tell the story about your haircut, just because it's a microcosm of what's going on in the economy as a whole. Small business people are struggling to adapt to this new way of life, barbers being one of them.
Absolutely. My hair guy used since I was 20 years old, so we have a very long and friendly relationship with him, and I'm very fortunate that way. And he's lost about a third of his business through COVID, in combination of cut of hours, challenges of clients coming in, reduced clients, and of course, just trepidation of clients, which is a big issue, and enforcing the mask requirement as well. You turn away customers if they're not going to comply with the health standards, and they're taking it very seriously. He maintains two sets of scissors, two sets of combs. He has the food disinfectants, which is causing him more money. So he's taking extremely cautious, and he's willing to cut people's hair outdoors. We figure it out somehow. And he's learned to cut around my mask. So I can keep my mask on the entire time with no difficulty while he's cutting it. And we did outside in the yard. I fortunately have an outdoor plug, so he's able to put his buzz clippers in. And we skipped the wash, unless you want to put the hose to me. at this point, we did that. And he was very thankful for the pandemic insurance, too. I mean, he received extra $600 a week, which helped him pay his rent, helped him full buy. He had some family issues he had to take care of, which gave him an opportunity to provide some assistance to his family. But I mean, at the same time, though, he was getting tired of not working on top of everything else. And obviously, when work came up, he took it right away once things started to reopen. And unfortunately, in his situation, he lost one of his parents to COVID, who had a lot of previous health condition problems as well. So the pandemic insurance also helped him out on care when he was dealing with the passing of one of his parents who already had broken her hip, had respiratory problems, had all these issues prior, and COVID was just over the edge. And he himself had the COVID experience where he lost his sense of taste. He lost his sense of, a lot of stomach problems, diarrhea, high fever. His sister got it. His other parent got it. But they survived. But it was a miserable 2 weeks. Very fortunate. His relatively mild symptoms, where it's kind of norovirus plus high fever and no sense of taste and smell. They quarantined, isolated. They disinfect throughout their illness. On top of being ill, they're just cleaning everything. So, fortunate they didn't suffer any long-term effects, but they had a first-hand experience on top of, being out of work. He's been laid off before, but, nothing like this,
Right. What is the current, I guess, status of unemployment in Massachusetts in terms of the timeline and the funding that's available now?
Well, the president had extended another $300, but provided the states participate with another $100 match, which Massachusetts has done. It took a while, I think, for people to figure out what exactly the president was talking about, where the funding would come from. Well, this is the part that kind of disturbs me a little. He took the money out of the FEMA money. So he took the Federal Emergency Management Act money. And those of us who pay higher insurance premiums on our homes on the coastline because of the flood zone should not be happy with this, because that money is for natural disaster relief. And you see all the hurricanes hitting the South Coast, the Gulf Coast. Unfortunately, a lot of our money that people pay here towards the FEMA accounts head south to those major strict regions. And he's taking money out of those accounts that is meant to help people who are now homeless, lost their homes, to be able to put them up temporarily someplace while they figure out what to do next and rebuild their homes and neighborhoods. So the pandemic insurance that the prison extended is not too much money. It's pretty much good to early October, potentially, on a national level, because I only think it's under, I'm trying to remember, I don't think it's more than $40 billion, but I think I may be wrong on that. And that's not going to last that long under $300 or $200 Fed and $100 match, which also impacts our employment trust fund too. Our trust fund's paid by payroll taxes. It's one of the things that employers pay for your employee. If you don't pay unemployment insurance tax and you lay off an employee, the employer is responsible for 100% of the cost of unemployment, which is why they pay unemployment insurance. Over the years, the legislature, not just us, but other states, has suspended the increase of those payroll taxes, which keeps the trust fund from reaching 100%. I think our trust fund was at 57% when the pandemic hit, if we reach a recession level unemployment. And of course, this is beyond any recession level. So last I looked before the pandemic hit, it was like $1.4 trillion-ish, give or take, in employment insurance. You think that's a lot of money until you think about how many people are unemployed and you start having to do 60% of the salary. It adds up really fast and it drains extremely fast. And with Massachusetts unemployment rate still floating around 7%, part of that is the people who are contractors, independent employees, gig workers, so to speak, self-businesses who do not pay unemployment insurance. And the federal government's picking up that share of the unemployment trust fund cost. But, you know, if the economy doesn't turn around at some level and we continue to pay unemployment benefits on a regular schedule on our part of the trust fund, we will have to borrow from the federal government and be part of our debt service. We've done this before in the 08 recession, so it's not something new, but this is a very different circumstance. So again, you know, to keep our economy moving, people need to wear their masks, hygiene. If you're sick, don't show up. You know, do curbside pickup. If you provide mailing service, use your local business curbside or mailing service. You know, I'm sure many businesses are very accommodating on trying to get you what you need, if you need to buy it. But most importantly, only we can keep each other healthy to keep our economy alive.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of holding their breath, waiting to see with schools poised to go back into session, how that's going to impact the status of the pandemic, if you will.
Well, you saw Dedham had already had a cluster incident. New Hampshire, one of the schools in Windham, New Hampshire, had an incident before they even opened schools. This is, of course, causing a lot of general concern with people because even then open schools, you know, young people are not paying attention, having parties. And you see this on college campuses, even locally, where, you know, I would expect better judgment from college students in our own state. But clearly, that's not the case, where they become mini super spreaders. And most of them don't have major symptoms, and they just go about this. And they're losing tuition. They're not getting their refunds. Schools are not taking this lying down. They don't want to put people at risk, whether it be administrative staff, faculty, or their fellow students. And I think, you know, at this public school level and private school level on K-12, I would suggest that, you know, they need to take very strong action to ensure that the safety of everyone involved. And I wish I had an easy answer, because a lot of families depend on school for kids getting good interaction. You know, obviously people have to work. They need the kids to engage there. Homeschooling is very hard when you're working. And it's hard to sit in front of a computer or video for that many hours at a time. I think people understate how hard it is. You're not watching a movie, people. I mean, you're watching a class, and it's no different. You got to focus. And doing sessions on the phone for 7+ hours, listening to debate and listening to the procedures on the phone, you have to stay focused through the whole process. And it gets exhausting, staying focused.
Yeah, I'm sure for the teachers too, it's a challenge, you know.
Oh, actually, teachers have to focus on multiple places at the same time.
Yeah. Earlier this week, Tacky, as you know, the governor added some extra money to help restaurants, you know, get through the cooler months that are coming, so they could continue to offer outdoor dining as long as possible. Do you think that was a good idea?
Well, we're trying to hold something together as long as we can while we still can do it. There's a 20% death rate already now, according to the Restaurant Association. They'll rise to 25 soon. And, you know, one indicator is alcohol licenses for restaurants. You know, Boston has had a massive turning on licenses back to the city, to the tune of 244 available licenses at the end of August. So, you know, people are closing out and they're returning the licenses back to the city, those restaurant liquor licenses. And I do understand that restaurant liquor licenses is not the super majority of restaurants. The super majority of restaurants are not alcohol businesses. We use it as an indicator of where we think the industry is going. Because if alcohol-related restaurants are closing permanently, you know, we can kind of guesstimate the effect on non-alcohol-related restaurants. So, you know, outdoor seating, you know, in New England, outdoor seating is going to have to end sometime as we get closer to Thanksgiving. And, you know, you've seen on maybe on the news about these igloos, space heaters. I do know that people have, like, outdoor tops, but the outdoor tops is basically being indoors anyway. You know, what's your comfort level on a circulated heating system where you got dry air, which cold, which is what this is. Coronavirus is a cold virus, thrives in, you know, right around that 60 degree-ish zone, indoors, dry air being circulated. And this is where it gets extremely scary.
Yeah. Anything else you think the state can do at this point to help small businesses in general?
Well, this comes to a funding issue. And, you know, we have an economic development stimulus bill still floating in conference committee to put some bond monies to help small businesses. But, I mean, for us, the state to provide you assistance, it won't be cash driven. There'll be very little cash opportunity unless we get some federal money to provide that cash. We're probably going to have to bond some money, and that means going into debt. And nobody likes that you're going to debt. I'm a firm believer of good managing debt. You can manage your debt and do some incredible things. So every time we go take debt away into new debt service, it takes away things like roads and bridges. Because we really, you know, really, really make a strong effort in Massachusetts to control our debt load, to ensure that, you know, every dollar that goes in goes to something concrete, literally. But, you know, in this pandemic situation, we might find ourselves maybe doing more bonding for small businesses. I mean, the state's debt load will go up. And with the potential debt load increase on unemployment insurance, you know, that's a combination that we'll pay the price for, you know, down the road. But we may be heading that direction where we're going to make some very challenged decisions about basically mortgaging the future to get past today. And I can see it now. 5 years now, we're going to get a whole lot of complaints from constituents saying, you know, you should never have done this, you know, stuff. But we don't have the, I do not have the good fortune of enduring the idea of future complaints when I got a problem now.
Right. Do you think there'll be extensions on municipalities paying into their OPEB accounts, you know, their pension accounts, their liability accounts? I know that's been happening before to kind of kick the can down the road a little bit. Do you think that'll happen again?
I think there'll be a serious conversation about doing stuff like that again. Once again, that extends your municipal debt service and it can hurt retirees. If you're actually current retirees should be okay. But if you're a future retiree, well, that's a problem if you're a public employee. You know, I think we're going to have this conversation continue in the winter about municipal assistance, whether it be holding town elections to helping out setting the next year's budgets. We did do a Chapter 70 amount based on last year's numbers, and we got some pandemic money from the feds that we, you know, gave the cities and towns as help as part of COVID-19 reopening. That should be helpful. I'm aware that Quincy had used FY20 numbers in local aid to stabilize their budget, and we're able to do that at our level. We made that commitment for the remainder of FY21. Local aid is also income tax dollars. Your tax dollars go straight to cities and towns. Not sure how that's going to play out exactly. And the lottery is still kind of all over the place. We are a scratch ticket lottery. It's about 65-ish plus of our sales. I expect that should come out strong as we head into holidays because people love to give scratch tickets away. The keynote continues to worry me a lot because the bars aren't open. Mm-hmm. And you have restaurants that are open that has bars and keynotes. So you can play keynote from your table outside. You can get the numbers off the TV screen. I'm sure they can arrange the screen somehow. Or they just take wait stuff and take your ticket and scan it at the bar and bring it back. But keynote is a significant portion of our lottery income, which also goes back to sales. It's about 15%. So, you know, we'll wait and see. And the multi-state lottery also took a hit because multi-state lotteries, other COVID states, you know, don't have as much lottery play, which reduces the prize pool. People got used to seeing a $500 million multi-state prize pool. That, you know, as economies slow to reopen around the state, you see those prize pools go up and people want to participate. And of course, you got that employment problem, people can't pay. Well, honestly, you should be playing the lottery if you have other priorities. So, you know, we will have to have more conversations with municipalities regarding further assistance as we move into the wintertime town elections. And it isn't that far away. Think about it. It's only really about 5 months to the towns and cities have to start the budget planning. And we're about 3 months away from when we start a budget planning for FY22.
Right. Yeah. So, well, speaking of elections, of course, there's one coming up November 3rd. And you found out some interesting information about absentee balloting and how that applies regarding the Constitution.
Yeah, you gave me homework last time we talked. So
and you did it.
I did it. I did a little poking around, and the Constitution sets up absentee balloting. That is actually very interesting. It allows a religious exemption, so you can't vote because of religious reasons. You can do absentee ballot if you're physically not in the state, and if you have physically in the state, medical emergency, and then you have some kind of impairment, physical, quote-unquote, disability that impedes you from getting to the polls. So the legislature and the governor threaded a really fine needle called COVID-19 as a physical disability. A state of emergency, you know, is what we're using them on with the governor, state of emergency still. We're calling COVID-19 as a physical disability that can impede you from going to the polls. Now, people think of physical disability as a medical ailment, but that's not always the case. If you have any reason you can't get into the polling location, let's say, you know, you have a broken leg, you know, a medical reason, but a physical impairment can be things like being in jail, which is not always my favorite example, but if you're a misdemeanor crime, you do not lose your rights to vote. You can vote in the county jail for a Quincy election by asking for an absentee ballot. Because it's not a felony crime, it's a misdemeanor crime. So that's a demonstration of physically unable to go to the polls. You know, people think hospital bed, but there's more right. things. For example, jury duty. If there's jury duty election day, you've been physically impaired from going to the polls. So if you're in Dedham Courthouse and you're a Dedham resident, and it turns into this like awful trial where you're in there for like 10 hours and you can't get to the polls that day, you can get an absentee ballot, even though you're physically in the town, but you're physically impaired. So we're calling COVID-19 a physical impairment because of the danger of being outside. But that's because of the governor's state of emergency. If we want to do mail-in ballots permanently, which I'm getting a lot of email for, which apparently the advocates should probably read the Constitution, we're going to need a constitutional amendment change. And I anticipate somebody, whether by ballot petition or by legislation, will file a bill next year to do that. And for those who don't know about ballot petitions or legislation that changed the Constitution, you need the legislature to approve that question in two separate legislative sessions then put it before the voters. So under an ideal situation, the first chance you could vote on this is 2024, mm-hmm. in an ideal situation.
Right.
But I think people generally like it. Quincy have about 10,000 mail-in ballot requests. You know, nearly a million statewide, made an extremely high turnout. 1.7 million people took up a primary ballot this year. So, you know, it seems to be very advantageous to folks to do so. So I think it's worthy of conversation, and I'm sure we're going to get people emailing and calling my office weighing in their opinion.
Yeah, and for a city election, there'd need to be, a new ordinance, right? A new law in the city to allow mail-in balloting for municipal elections.
Yeah, I don't know the city charter, but I suspect town charters, if you live in the town, I suspect that people are going to have to go review their charters about conducting mail-in balloting if they so desire to do so, and the costs associated with it.
Sure.
The self-addressed envelope and such. But I mean, I think that's something that the municipalities would have to look at their own charters and decide how to go about it, or whether or not their charters has to follow the state constitution. I haven't looked into that level of legal depth, but I'm sure the city and town solicitors should really get on it.
Yeah, it's interesting, to see where it goes from here. So another landmark change caused by the pandemic, the things that'll be lasting, hopefully post-pandemic.
Exactly. It's like telemedicine has become is permanent. We're still evolving it by regulation. We have a building conference committee to do telemedicine, and the governor's emergency rates continue to evolve a little here, a little there, as the both community health centers, the various private doctors groups, as well as the hospitals are still rolling this technology out. Urgent care centers have taken a whole new role with COVID-19, as well as places like CVS on testing. And insurance companies have to adjust to a COVID-19 world as well. So, healthcare is something on COVID that's going to make a permanent change in our lives in terms of how we do medical care. And mm-hmm. You're right, there'll be other things as we go along to learn works out pretty well beyond a medical crisis. So, once again, innovation caused by necessity.
What do you think about the governor's mandate for flu shots for students?
Yeah, I get some anti-flu shot emails now, and the reality is that you get like 5 different immunizations already prior to going to school. I'm a bit older now, so I don't remember exactly what was involved, but I do understand that parents have to demonstrate, I think, 5 different immunizations. I did a little look at my medical records online and realized I'm overdue for some booster shots. I think the flu vaccine has a very small number of people that have had negative impact, but people have used those minute cases as a reason why we should not get it, despite the fact it's a highly tested, decades-old vaccine. And I read emails, I read this stuff, and it's completely non-medical science. They're just taking anything off the internet and saying it's true, and it's not the consensus of the medical community. Scientific stuff is peer-reviewed. It goes through a lot of years of looked at by other people to reach a consensus on, what is the ground basis of science. People just think that you make one conclusion and it's the end of the game. This is not how science works in the 21st century or the 20th century. So we need to take the flu shot. I mean, I need to get mine. Hit the CVS, Walgreens, or go to my doctor's office. I'm going to make a time to do that myself. If you have a flu shot, it reduces the symptoms or protects you from the flu. It reactivates your antibodies to know to look for the flu, because your antibodies, your body does not always keep a memory of the flu. The flu does change, like COVID-19 is already changing on slight strain changes, which the flu vaccine has to keep up with. And particularly with COVID-19, if you had the flu shot, you can start ruling out potential diseases associated with your symptoms. So, a lot of the COVID-19 symptoms look like the common cold in the flu and the neurovirus. So if you have a flu shot, you can start kind of like whittling down your options on maybe you do have those symptoms or not. And those who have dealt with me through winter months know I get a level of bronchitis once we get to the dry, cold weather. And this is a reoccurring part of my life since I was about 33, so well into 15 plus years. And that COVID-19 scares me too, because as a person very, very vulnerable to bronchitis, and this is a respiratory disease, I'm also extremely concerned about this. And the flu shot's crucial for me to ensure that I can eliminate the flu as one of my possible ailments when I pick up a respiratory disease.
Sure. at the end of the time for us today, Tacky, but I always like to ask you about the census before we go.
Sure. I got a couple of updates. One, actually, I'll brought really fast is our federal delegation got us some CDGB money, Community Development Block money related to COVID money from the CARES Act. So this city's getting $1.1 million, $1,176,113 from the feds to help with COVID-19 relief from the federal government. Senator Warren, Senator Markey, and Congressman Lynch have worked very hard on the CARES Act, but also to get as much money as we can back to the city and the state. So that's good news for the city of Quincy to get some more COVID assistance money. As for the census, we're continuing to do better. U.S. Census self-reporting 65.6%. Massachusetts at 68.1%. We're well ahead of the curve. We're actually very well ahead of the curve compared to last week. We picked up about 0.7-ish percent more, 0.5% more. Quincy continues to grow at 6.79%, but our neighbors around us continue to also grow. Weymouth's at 74.1%, we picked up another a tenth of a point. Braintree's at 78.64%, Randolph at 69.8%, Milton at 81.9%. So, you know, the South Shore region is doing very well in self-reporting. Again, the census workers are out making phone calls, visiting you, they have your lanyards on, they're social distance, they'll never ask for money. That's, you know, they'll never ask for money. They'll never threaten you with deportation or potential loss of government benefits if you don't participate. They'll never call police action on you for non-participation. So again, you remind the audience there are a lot of scams going on, and unfortunately, unscrupulous people are trying to take advantage of people's fears, especially the deportation issue. I mean, this is a very common one now in the current political environment. Trying to scare new citizens, permanent residents, and even people undocumented from not participating in the census. But self-reporting is very high, so it makes it easier for the door-to-door people and all our safety to try to reduce the amount of people that need to visit you to remind you to fill the census. So you can still do this at 2020census.gov. October 31st is the deadline this year. But the closer you get to 100% reporting, it's important for $1.5 trillion in funding. In the case of City of Quincy, if we crack 100,000, it changes our CDBG money formula immensely down at U.S. HUD. So it is essential that you count everyone in your household.
All right. Good to see you, Tacky. And again, nice haircut.
Thank you, Joe. I look forward to seeing you another week. It will grow a little bit longer next time.
All right. Take care.